We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're here.
I wish I could keep this feeling. I wish I could keep this feeling.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man, Andre as hell, coming at you from Blue Wire Studios here at the Wynn Las Vegas. Producer Cole Bebe making sure we get on the air today. A little technical difficulties, but nothing that man can't handle. He is the best in the booth. So we are here chopping it up with you. We did our last show remote. I didn't get to look at the old man as we were recording. I like to announce that he looks exactly the same. Unenthused, the normal curmudgeon self, a little more grays in the beard. That is about it. Are you just going all gray? Is it going to be ghostly?
I'm not dying this. What do I look like?
No, just for men?
Just for men? No, man. This is seasoning. Like, I don't like when people do that. When they dye their beards, what's the point?
I don't know. Like, I mean, fuck it. My dad listens to it. My dad dies like just his like little chin music joint because he can't grow a beard.
You call it chin music?
Yeah, it's just the chin music.
That's impressive.
Right here, the goatee. But he'll like just for men that. And then now he's starting to like let it salt and pepper a little bit.
Embrace it. It looks good. Like, I mean, I ain't just talking about me, but when you get some gray, just
I got like three grays.
You'll get more, don't worry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the kids are going to drive me to the grays.
I mean, you've already passed that part with the kids. But why? I don't know.
It's teenage girl life, man.
Like, I see people dyeing their beards, and I'm just like, you look ridiculous.
Yeah,
like, I know you're 70 years old, right? Like, I know you're 70, and you got this black beard. I ain't buying it, bro.
My question is, when you go to a barbershop, right, and they hit you, you know, you try to get super fresh, and they hit you with the paint. Bam, bam, bam. If you have the all-gray beard, do they have gray paint?
I don't know. I never...
Right? Like, how do you do that? Someone has the Canelo, the red beard.
They got to have colors. They must have a palette.
Yeah, you got to do something to get it crisp. Like, yeah. you got to just be all, prepare for all situations.
Yeah. I just don't like, as I've gotten older in life, it's like, you could tell when people are older. Now, obviously, black don't crack, like, you know. But when I see somebody, no matter what race they are, and they have things that don't match.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, lady, they shouldn't sit up that high at that age. That's impossible, right? That just defies the laws of gravity.
As long as you're keeping it 100 on it. Like, yeah. Usually it's...
Just don't lie to me, right? If I pull up on you and be like, hey, how old are you? And you be like, I'm 50. And I'm like, you ain't got no gray in your beard? Nah, you're a liar.
Yeah,
like, come on. I cannot trust you, and I will not talk to you for the rest of your life.
So, one of our bets... And hopefully, I'm going to win this next one.
You won't.
But one of our future bets. Really? Like, no joke? I got to bet you. I don't know what it's going to be on my end. But on your end, you got to go sans beard. Got to go baby face. You can't even tell the wife. Like, you got to go baby face and just shock her. One, your daughter's not going to know who you are.
No, she's going to be, get this man out of my house. 911. Yeah. No.
I don't look crazy because with the bald and no beard,
yeah,
it's just a lot of skin.
I look like a Dragon Ball Z character.
Yes, that would be perfect. Krillin?
Yeah. Krillin. Krillin's probably, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the facial hair bets are always my favorite because it's just like, Big Mac. Big Mac said he hasn't seen his face in like 15 years.
I believe it. But you got to win a bet first.
I got to win a bet.
Like, you can't make bets and future bets. Like,
no. Tom Brady's worrying me.
I mean, you know.
It's all right.
You picked the Bucs.
I know I picked the Bucs. Because, I mean, look at the Rams fell off.
They'll be fine. Even though McVay, I just think at some point it's like, all right, you may not get this. But so, you still have the Packers. You still have the Cardinals.
Stupid Niners are looking good.
Niners are on a winning streak, getting into the playoffs. You still have the Cowboys who had a shootout with the Bucks. Look, man.
I'm going to stick to betting on combat sports. That's going to be my next thing.
As long as you're not betting on Patrick Cummins again.
No. Patrick Cummins. The great Patrick Cummins.
Ain't nothing great about that. You're lucky you didn't place a bet for that one.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. But I mean, like, who knows? Teofimo lost. I probably would have bet someone on that. Or would have lost that bet as well.
Yeah.
So, but I can digest it better if I'm betting on combat sports. The NFL has betrayed me. MLB is the reason I've lost like three of these bets already.
And pro wrestling. Handshake deal.
Handshake deal. John Moxley. Shout out to the WWE. There was a report that said they were helping Mox through this time, even though he's with AEW, and I'm sure AEW is doing all they can because they are great over there.
I'm very curious how that worked out. I don't think it was a situation where Vince was like, oh, Mox needs rehab. I'm going to help him out. I'm sure there was something in his contract that rolled over, and it was just like he's getting help, and it's the WWE's paying for it, and Tony's like, well, if they're going to pay for it.
Yeah, why would we pay? I'm sure they're helping in other ways.
Yeah, because, I mean, if anybody knows, like, Tony took care of Brody's everything, the family and everything. I just – when we have our pro wrestling show, it's going to be interesting because, yeah, just a small nugget of pro wrestling. I cringed watching Liv Morgan and Becky have that their promo, and Liv was like, you're the reason my friends got released.
Yeah, I guess a lot
that's
of
not what happened. That. And then people were like, whoa, well, what about you guys are talking about, you know, CM Punk and MJF. That was really good.
Yeah.
This felt really forced, and it hit too close to home for people who really did get sent home and had nothing to do with Becky Lynch's contract.
Yeah, and some people's spouses were sent home, and they're still working there.
Yeah, like, so it's just what are we like, doing? What, like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Like, yo.
It's breaking the fourth wall for no reason.
Yeah, like they was really trying hard.
Yeah.
We got to have another pro wrestling show because what's day one's coming up. War Games is this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to have to. I mean, we'll mix it into our year end awards,
which
is coming up in like a week or two. And we'll still be doing our pro wrestling year end awards. So that'll be really dope. Wanted to start this show off with Grammys. We talk Grammys every year. You are now not covering the Grammys anymore. Mm-mm. It was fun when you were. Because this was always the time of year where the list came out. And I was like, damn, I hope they give Dre like the worst album to cover. Because you always did the album joint. So they gave you Kendrick one year.
They gave me Kendrick. They gave me Chance. They gave me Beyonce. And then they gave me Post Malone. And I was like, you motherfucker.
Which in hindsight, that was a pretty good one. Like Post is still around, right?
What do you mean a pretty good one? Hard pass. I don't want Post
Malone. Not a Post Malone guy?
No. You are?
No, I mean, I'm indifferent. I know people who are like ride or die for Post Malone.
Really?
Yeah.
Who are they? They're not
out there.
They're not hip-hop heads.
No. God, no. I don't think they qualify him as hip-hop.
No, it's like if you ride for Post Malone, you also ride for Pitbull. I feel like you're in that boat, in Flo Rida.
Damn, I don't think he's like that, though. Like, that's disrespectful. Like, the people I know that like Post Malone were like transplant Kid Cudi fans. So it's like the same, that like Kid Cudi went away and they're like, oh, we're Post Malone people now. Like they were very pro legalization of things in this state. They, you know, they're people of a certain ilk. So like, it was like, cool, I understand that. Like, and now they're just Post Malone fans. I don't get it, it's not for me.
It ain't for me either. So I didn't enjoy having to write his bio. There's two things, there's like in my history of journalism, oh, there's a few. Post Malone's bio for the Grammys and the French Montana interview that I had to do for Showing Proof for XXL. And the editor at the time kept telling me, you have to make him sound better, like in the interview. Like, you got to make him sound like he's the next big thing. And I was like, but I don't like him. And it was just like, well, you got to punch this up. Like, these mixtapes are great. And I was like, but they weren't. I was like, why did you give me this assignment? I don't want to make this sound great.
His mixtapes were pretty good.
No, they weren't. And
the mac and cheese?
Yeah, I didn't like the mac and cheese.
Okay.
But that's always been my problem. Like, I can do my job. But if I have to lie about what's really good, I have a problem with it. And it was one of the days at XXL, I was just like, yeah, I don't think I want to do this anymore because I don't want to get assigned stuff I don't like. And then I get stuck doing it. And then it took like 3 weeks of revisions because I kept going, no. It was like, well, how about this? Very hyperbolic. And I was like, nah, I can't do that. And that was the day I was like, yeah.
You would hate editing yourself. If you were an editor for like.
I love editing myself. I've seen my copy. I'm fine with my copy. It's other people's copy that bothers me. I don't have a problem with my editing.
But your editors are probably like, this guy. Like, you're just like, nope, not revising that.
No,
nope.
I don't mind revising things. It's the copy is fine. But when they tell me to make somebody sound better than what they are, to me, that's like disingenuous. Because like, well, why did you give this to me when I told you I didn't like him in the first place?
You're like the Brock Lesnar of hip hop writing.
No.
You don't sell at all. Like,
I'm not going to lie.
Just embellish a little bit.
Like, I had the same thing. Like, I don't even know why we're on this subject. But when I wrote Jeezy's the Thug Motivation, the second one, I think I had to write.
Oh, 102? That wasn't the greatest.
They gave me the review. And I was like, I don't want this. And it was like, oh, well, we don't have anybody else to write it. I was like, fine. I was like, I'm going to review it the way I see it. I gave it like a 2.5. And they was like, you can't do that. And I was like, why can't I? And they was like, because, you know, it's a good album. And I was like, no, it's not. Why did you give this to me? Yeah. If I can't give the review what I want to give the review, why am I reviewing it?
Yeah, that's tough.
Now,
wasn't great.
And if you have a consensus of other people who think the album's great, I'm totally fine with you giving it to them. But you gave it to me. And when you give it to me, you get my opinion. And my opinion is, this isn't good.
They I gave it a 2.5.
Yeah, it was like.
Did it stick as a 2.5?
No, they bumped it up to a 3.5.
Okay.
And they had somebody. I'm trying to remember what happened. Who cares? It's the source. They had somebody like try to punch it up, and I was like, nah, I take my name off of it. And it was like this big back and forth, and I can't remember what happened. I think it ended up at either a 3 or 3.5, but I was like, no.
Oh, so no byline for you on that.
I don't think so, because I was adamant. I was like, if you bump this rating up, take my name off it. I don't like this album. It's not good. And they're like, well, we could figure it out if we keep the copy the same and just move the mic rating up. I was like, then it doesn't match.
Yeah.
I was like, what are we doing here? Like, yeah. So that's, I can't, I'm just a very honest writer and I have my own personal
we
taste.
We gotta talk about your journeys in hip hop journalism one day. Like,
yeah, we can.
The old school, just pre even giving Kanye 5 mics, which you want to give 4.5 and talk you into 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, we gotta talk about young. Steadfast, Andreas Hill.
Oh, I was the worst. Like,
uncompromising.
No, because you put me in a position in a hip-hop website, Hip-Hop DX, which was just starting, and it became one of the top hip-hop websites out there, period, under my eye, under my watch. And now everybody's watching me. And now, like, the labels are coming for me and asking questions. There is a situation. They asked me to interview Diddy. And I was like, for what? This was around the time when
who asked this? Like, who did, well, like, yo, you want to interview Puff?
If
for what?
If like, you know, if anybody is listening to the show that does music journalism, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If Diddy's going to do an interview, it's not about what you think it's about, and you're going to be restricted to a certain line of questions. And I'm not that guy. So my friend at Atlantic at the time, she was like, "Hey, you want to interview Diddy?" And I said, "For what?" And I was like, because this is around the time the lock situation was happening. I said, oh, can I ask him about Jada throwing a fridge on him? She's like, no. I was like, well, I don't want to do it then. Because what am I doing? What's the point? And she was like, well, he wants to promote his cologne. This is when Diddy had his fragrance.
Oh, that can't be good.
And I was like, oh, I don't want to, I'm not doing that. So I passed it off to one of my writers. And my writer ended up doing it. And I was like, I'm not doing it. I was like, we'll do it because it's Diddy. And she was like, you can't ask those questions. I was like, he's going to sneak him in there. And the worst thing that Diddy could do was say no comment. I was like, but you can't tell me what not to ask. Like, there's certain things, like, okay, if there's, like, some legal stuff going on, I won't ask about that because I know you can't answer it. But if it's a very, like, common question that you just don't feel like talking about, I'm still going to ask you. You just say no comment. That's it. She was like, fine, he might hang up on him. Like, I don't care. I was like, I'll write that in the copy. Diddy hung up on us. That's just what I do. So Diddy calls my writer and then puts him on hold. 45 minutes.
Damn.
My writer, this is AIM, Instant Messenger days. He aims me and he's like, I'm still on hold. I said, hang up on him. Hung up. I was like, he was like, well, no, we might. I said, I don't care. Hang up on him. He hung up. My friend in Atlanta calls me. Did your writer hang up on Diddy? I said, absolutely. He said, well, why? I was like, does Diddy want to do the interview or not? We don't have all day. He's got other things to do. I got stuff to do. I know Diddy's a busy man, but it's disrespectful to have an interview and put somebody on hold for 45 minutes. Diddy called back and apologized. Not like, and it wasn't like, I'm sorry. It was like, my bad. I had something important going on, blah, blah, blah. But at first, he was like, well, he's not going to do the interview. And I said, I don't care. it's about his cologne. Yeah, I don't care. I do not care. Like, Dos Effects manager, they had me review a Dos Effects album that was like well past the expiration date of Dos Effects. And I gave it a 1.
Damn.
And the publicist called me and was like, what's wrong with you? I was like, it sucks. And she was like, hey, but you know, you're going to get blackballed for the industry? I was like, no, I'm not. Well, we're not going to send you anything else. Like, please don't. If you're going to send me whack stuff like this, don't send it to me. Like, I don't care.
Cold-blooded.
And this is how DX became DX, because we did not care. I taught my writers, you got 5. The scale is 1 to 5, including 0. Use all that shit.
Don't melt to this shit. There's no 5.5. No, not 7.5. Even
that. The source made it a habit to only give albums between 3 and 5. And I thought that was very disrespectful to the rating system. You have a rating system, use it. If an album sucks, it shouldn't get a 3. Give it a 0. We gave LL Cool J's Phenomenon a 1.
That's
boy.
That's being kind.
Did Def Jam, were they mad at me? And I was like, what y'all gonna do? Stop sending me music? Because now at this point, we're one of the top music websites out there. What you gonna do? Not send me anything? Well, we're mad. We're not gonna give you an interview with LL. I was like, I wasn't getting it anyway. I don't care.
It's not what you did there anyway.
I was like, I don't care. So yeah, one day we'll talk about that journey and how it transitioned to combat sports, thinking it's gonna be better on this side. No, it's not. There's more clowns over here than there were over there.
You thought.
I said, damn, I can't. Now it's old clowns. I moved into the boxing space, and I was like, man, these old people are terrible. And then there's young writers that come in, and I'm like, wow, y'all are clowns too.
Young writers? Honest to God, if we're talking, like, I'm not sure the last new writer I've seen in boxing or MMA. I feel like I came in 9 years ago now. I don't know anyone who came in after.
I don't know. I mean, it's a thin space, right?
Cop was here when I came in. Cop is around my age. No, Mark was here. Everybody. Like,
I mean, there's a few people that pop up. There's no regulars, right? Because there's no money in combat sports writing.
Yeah.
Sorry. If anybody listening to the show is like, y'all want to get into combat sports writing? Sorry. I'm not telling you not to.
That's why I wear DCs.
No, that's not. You work at ESPN. You got to stop. But there ain't no money in this. Like, when people come in, it's like, you're going to get rich. There are exceptions to the rule. You may make some money. I'm not telling you to not do this, but come in with your expectations tempered.
Yeah.
If you come in here talking about, I'm about to make bank covering boxing, no, you're not. You better find a side hustle.
Yeah. Sean Seidel. Sean, it might be the only new younger person.
Yeah.
And he came in like a year after.
Yeah.
And Sean, shout out to him and, you know, Sean Porter.
Over Fight Hype and everything. Yeah, Sean does an incredible job. But I came from music because I was tired of the politics and the nonsense and the late nights. And I came here and I was like,
let me cover the UFC in boxing.
I was like, what the hell did I do? Now, granted, I've made a good living doing this. Like, a much better living than most covering combat sports. I couldn't believe it when I came over here. I was like, who are these people? Why are y'all so territorial?
Well, obviously, because there's no new people for like a decade.
And then,
like, you can stay in it, regardless of how good you are or how bad you are, as we've also seen, you can stay in it for like 30 years without being questioned before someone realizes you suck.
Total trash. Full disclosure. I got voted. They did not vote me into the Boxing Writers Association the first time I applied. They denied me.
I'm not shocked.
And I was like,
due to current revelations?
No, this was a while ago.
I'm just saying, like, due to what we know now. The past year.
But they denied me. And I got the call. I can't remember who called me, and I'm not going to put the names on blast. But I'm pretty sure I know who didn't vote for me, right? And this is back, this had to be like 2013, something like that. And they say, oh, we denied you the Box Writers Association. We apologize. You can apply next year. I was like, no, thanks. I was like, why not? I was like, it's not that serious. I applied because I know I'm better than most of you guys. And you denied me because of what? And the rationale was because I didn't write primarily for a credible boxing publication. I covered boxing for MTV, for BET, for The Source, for Vibe, for Complex. I freelanced for The Ring, and they denied me. And I was like, really? Because I write for mainstream publications? You're going to tell me no? Well, there was a couple people on the board that felt like you needed to write for. I was like, wait, is it because my writing's bad? And they was like, well, you know, maybe a few more years. I was like, nah, I'm good. About a year later, they came. Hey, say, can you apply? I said no. You guys denied me. Then they let me in. They asked me to come in. They got a new president, Joe Santioco, who's great. He's like, oh, you know, we could use it. And I was like, that's nice because you guys have like no black people in the BWA. But I'll join just for that, just to say that, just so I see my name there. But just know, I don't like y'all. Like as a label, as a group, I was like, is that, like, you denied for what?
Yeah, I don't even listen, man. I don't even get the call. I don't even get the email. No one is like,
it's useless. Look, man,
I
there's gonna be
people know better than to allow me into spaces. See, they scared of what I might say.
I don't
they
think that's me it. In there.
They're scared of these hot takes, right?
I don't think that's
you're the calm, level-headed one in this group, which is saying something. So, like, yeah, now people don't invite me into the same spaces. Like, they barely let me vote for the pound-for-pound list at ESPN. Yeah. I got in there, they'd be like, oh, this kid is wild, but now I'm on every list. And it's like, yeah, you're going to catch these hot takes.
To them, it was just, it was my byline. It was the old heads that were around, like the ESPN heads and the Max Boxing or whoever it was at the time. And I was still new, even though I'd been in the game at that point for 6-7 years. And even though I was writing for Jay-Z, Life and Times, I was doing all this stuff. Like, I wrote for publications that got way more views than people on that board, the stuff that they were writing.
Oh, yeah. Then, like, the niche boxing.
Yeah, and I was like, so I'm getting penalized because of that? I was like, I should go back to music. Y'all are whack. But I stayed, and I was like, cool. Then, like, I remember, like, the UFC or MMA tried to have their journalists, and I was like, what are y'all doing? Like, is this for some? Well, we got to be a union. And then, you know, the thing happened with Ariel. And I was like, y'all didn't protect him?
At all.
Like, y'all didn't do nothing for Ariel.
Nah. His follower count and his brand protected him.
I mean, a few people, you know.
It went to bat. Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, do you guys understand what associations and unions are for? But, again, it's crazy because I'm like the young guy in these groups.
Yeah. But and you're I'm the like, old man at heart.
Yeah. I'm the old grumpy man at heart. And I'm like, man. And now look. Now the tables have turned. Like, all right. I'm here, though. Any of you young riders out there that want to get in, come to Death Row.
It's actually very fun working for you. I will co-sign that. Shout out to Dre, who let me write for Champions when you were at Champions.
Yeah.
And that was fun. I don't miss writing. Every day. It's weird. I want to write more, obviously, so I did my piece on Undefeated. Probably have another one coming up here shortly, ESPN.com. I get to do some things, you know, write a graph or two on, like, why I voted this way on a pound-for-pound list, you know, why I have Tyson Fury on there at all. Granted, he's a heavyweight, stuff like that. So I'm like, cool. But, like, the daily grind of writing, I look at that now, I'm just like, yo, I don't know how many people read anymore. I hate doing something and just be like, yo, my voice is lost. But then I read something like, shout out to Corey Erdman, who put out his story on Teofimo after he lost. I was like, God damn, this is good.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, well, that's why people write. Like, but I need to do like one of those for like once a month to get out of my system. But yeah, like writing every day. So they definitely wouldn't accept me. They'd be like, oh, you don't have enough bylines. I'd be like, you're damn right.
That's probably true. I mean, look, man. Boxing Writers Association needs to change for a number of reasons. Mostly because ain't really that many writers. You can't just focus on writing. You got to focus on multimedia. People do podcasts. People do other things.
Yes, social media specialist.
And
this guy.
If you're going to have an association, you should have everybody that's involved in documenting the sport. It's really that simple.
Yeah. Some of the biggest names are YouTube guys.
Yeah.
Like, that. They get more views and clicks than anyone now. Like,
well, that makes it tough because you got to be careful with the YouTube guys.
No, like high level.
Well,
like,
yeah.
Sekhbet should probably be in something like that.
Oh,
like,
Elie Sekhbet.
Elie's look, like doing numbers that are crazy. He gets quotes that other people don't get. Like, he should probably be considered.
Elie's really good at what he does.
Yeah.
Right? There's very few people. But then you have other people that just run around with cameras.
No, and can't let people
face. And then they have these, like, unverifiable opinions about why Al Heyman's a racist, or that Bob Arum is stealing money from people. It's like, God, you didn't even do, like, that's not even journalism.
Yeah.
Like, you guys aren't even citing sources. You're just making up stuff.
You just want a ticket to the fight.
Yeah. And they get them.
They do.
Boy, that we could do a whole show on the credentialing process between boxing and MMA. And, like, how did you get in and you didn't? Or why are you seated here and why are you up there?
Boy. I still, listen, every time I go to a fight, I'd be like, yo, I'm on the floor. I'm good. Like, now, I mean, at this point, it is what it is. Like, you're going to sit me up top, I'm with ESPN. But before ESPN, I was just like, yo, this person's down here? Like, what do they do?
No, there's
respectfully.
There's no, like, rhyme or reason to it.
Where does their content go?
Dude, in boxing, like, we're way off the beaten path. I don't even care.
It is what it is. We do what we want.
In boxing, you go to a fight. Once upon a time, there was like 7 media tables, 7 rows of people. And I'm like, I know all of you don't write.
Nah.
Why are you even here?
I see people to this day that go and set up their laptop on press row and start a live stream. And they're just live streaming and talking about the fight.
And that's boxing.
And that's their content.
And then you go to UFC, where there's like 2 rows.
Oh, yeah, the
of
two
media.
Rows gets catty.
And it's like, wow.
It used to be 3.
It used to be 3. They cut it down to like 2.
2.
Yeah, and then when it's a big fight, it's like barely a row.
Yeah.
They move everybody to the press bridge, which, except for like John Morgan.
Yeah.
And his blue polo.
Yeah, like, you got to be doing that for a long time.
Yeah, and
Iolis, the
God, I'm just gonna pull the curtain back. If y'all watch UFC press conferences, the funniest thing to me is that they do a press conference and they allow the same 3 people to ask like 17 questions to begin the press conference
in the same order every time.
Yes, and then
John always gets the first question, right?
The first like 9, and then they'll go occasionally. They'll go, Andres, do you have a question? I was like, no, you just let him ask like 13 questions. Why am I here? Like, what am I doing at a press conference if you're not going to allow the press to ask questions? You're going to go to the same person, and not just 1 question, not just 2, not 3. And I'm not even mad at John for this.
Not his fault. I don't know whose fault. I don't know if it's anyone's
it's
fault.
It's the UFC's fault.
It's just a rhythm that is established.
That's not even a rhythm. That's favoritism. Because you also know that you built a relationship with that person. They're not going to ask certain questions, right? And I'm not saying John's not going to be controversial. I'm not going to say Ioli's never going to be controversial. But what I am saying is you're creating an atmosphere where you're a circle of trust and you're leaving everybody else out. Hmm. And if you allow the same people to ask questions, who's got the first question? And you know it's John Morgan. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
Oh, yeah, you know where the mic is going, like, first. Like, it, as a member of the media, that's always something. It's like, okay, we're going to open it up to questions. And the mic people go to the same spot, like, immediately. Yeah. So you know, like, all right, let me ask a question. Raise my hand. Maybe they get to me 5th, 6th. I got some time to prepare my question. And guaranteed, my first question is already taken.
Always.
Always. So I'm just like, cool, let me get a different angle. My pet peeve is people who ask questions without intent.
Oh, that happens. Oh, let's not start about it. There's two ways. I'll let you continue. There's 2 of these. There's the one that asks a question, you're like, I don't even know who you write for, so where is that question going, right? Like, you're asking this question, and I know you don't write for anybody, so where is that going? Or the other one is like, Dana, you did such a great job this weekend. It was so amazing to come to the show. Thank you so much. How does it feel to put on such a successful show? What kind of question is that?
Like, it makes no sense. Like, one, what is he supposed to say to that? Every show is a good show.
It's like training camp question, right?
Yeah.
How was training camp? Terrible. That's what I'm going to say. It was the worst. I broke my leg and I'm fighting this weekend. Like, that's how people should answer those dumb questions.
Yeah, just completely off the grid. Like, you're going to get the same answer every single damn show. So you really don't got to ask it. But yet, like, asking a question, if you're writing a story, ask a question to use in your story. Ask the fighter about, you know, their last training camp for this, if it's a rematch, ask them how this training camp versus that training camp, because then you can use that in the story. People just be asking questions just to ask it, to hear the sound of their own voice.
All the time.
To get a little bit of camera time.
To get on that YouTube camera, like, where you're standing there looking goofy.
All the time.
And you're asking all these questions, and then, you know, and I hate, this is the one I hate the most. The last time we talked, when I talked to you last Thursday, you remember that? And I said, yo, I'm like, yo, nobody cares that you asked him a question last Thursday.
I will say this. Only one person I will give a pass for that. And I love it. It's Gareth. It's my boy. Gareth Davies.
Well.
He will tell a story.
Yeah, Gareth is.
When they ran into each other. Yo, it'll take 3 minutes for him to tell the background story. And I am captivated every time. That man is a marvel. I don't care. Nobody else, though.
Yo, Gareth is
Let that be his gimmick. Nobody else.
Gareth is a rock star. If anybody doesn't know Gareth Davies, like, you'll see him at UFC events. Go to London and see how he's treated in London. When I was there for the Joshua fight, I was like, oh, I get it now. Yeah. I was hanging out with him, and he was like, Andreas, let's go drink. And I was like, he was like, don't worry, we're not going to pay for anything. I was like, you're probably right. I'm probably going to die messing with you. He had, like, the rhinestone belt on. I'm like, yo.
Yo, he rocks, like, the cummerbund.
Yo, everything's too tight.
Jacket open.
Everything's too tight. Yeah, I'm like, Gareth, you can't. When did you buy this? 74? You can't. I guess you can. You can pull
the
it off.
Hair. Oh.
But he's the one guy. But the thing about Gareth when he asks that question is there's actual context in what he's about to ask.
Correct.
There's other people that say, Valentina, when we talked last week, you said you would win. Now that you won, like, wait, what? There's nothing to do with nothing. You want her to remember you. I get it. But yeah. Stop, y'all got to chill, man. Some of y'all are wild corny with y'all questions.
Oh, man. We go for days with these media stories.
Oh, I'll be here all week. I'll be here to the point where I'll be banned from every event. Because the publicists will hate me. The writers will want to fight me. There's only a few cool ones, man. I'm just being honest. And y'all know who you are if you listen to this show.
We're in a group chat with most of them.
Yeah, and my circle is small. And there's other people who I respect. I always say I respect Ariel Helwani. You can say whatever you want. Me and Ariel have been cool for a while. Ariel's passionate about what he does. He's very straightforward. I've watched that man's career climb from the bottom up.
The work ethic is crazy. Like, I know a lot of my boys in the industry who I know and go to for advice and everything, like, especially around my age, a lot of them went to Syracuse, like, for school and their school of journalism and everything. There's a whole different work ethic people get going through that program. So I get it why it's, like, the best sports journalist program in the nation, because they are just machines. And Ariel's the same way, just like a robot. Like, it's crazy the preparation he puts into those shows. And people are like, oh, yeah, Monday show, Wednesday show. Like, we can do this all day. Like, I can speak on the mics, I can talk. But that's a different level of, in terms of preparation. I don't even got the patience for that.
Nah, he's really good at what he does. So there's other people that aren't in, like, our group chat that I respect. There's a lot of clowns, man.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
A circle of clowns that I wrap circles around.
All right. We were supposed to talk hip-hop on this section. It went off on a crazy tangent.
Yeah, we were supposed to talk about the Grammys.
Yes. We're just going to go through this real quick then, because I want your opinion on these things. Now that you don't cover it, this is the only place you're giving your opinion.
Look. I'll be back. Maybe not for the Grammys, but I've been made a few offers.
Oh, you're dabbling.
I only dabble in things I want to do.
Sundance again this year?
Nah.
Too cold? Yeah. Oh, no, you're going to the cabin anyway. Yeah, you love the snow and weird stuff.
That's not weird. What's wrong with you? Anyway, stick to
Who
this.
Who wants to be cold? You know why I don't like the snow?
Because you don't have a coat. That's exactly why you don't like the coat.
Because,
like,
you need to wear a jacket.
That's the dumbest.
I don't want to go anywhere where I need to wear a jacket. Mountains and snow? Off my list.
I'm about to plug my headphones. How can you enjoy, like, winter wonder? Like, yo, Utah is beautiful. But
I went to school in Utah.
All you got
to
do is wear a coat.
Froze my balls off.
All you have to do is wear a coat.
It's so unnecessary. Even when I went to school in Utah,
that's what you just said was a lie. To say it's so unnecessary to have a coat when it's cold, do you hear yourself?
It's so unnecessary to go there when it's cold. Beautiful in the fall. If you ever want to go to Utah, fall, April.
That's enough. Get to the Grammys.
Beautiful time in Utah.
That's enough.
Beautiful. Salt Lake in April, chef's kiss.
That's enough. Jesus.
Listen, don't go in the winter. You crazy. So, Grammys. Really, I just want to touch on rap albums and R&B, because you're an R&B dude.
Yes.
So, best R&B albums, and I'm telling you, I haven't heard one of these.
Damn.
You damn shame. No, listen, I've heard one. I lie. Jasmine Sullivan, Hotels, I listen to.
It's a great album.
Yeah, pretty good. Her, Back of My Mind. Haven't listened to the whole thing.
It's an amazing album.
This is her second nomination. I don't think she's had an album that wasn't nominated for a Grammy.
Her is like the exception to the rule of the Grammys. Like people, there's people that have accused her of being an industry plant. But the thing is that she makes really good music and performs at all the right events. Like she is smart in how she, but her
like
music
her team is
yeah,
great.
But she makes incredible music. I love her. Keep going.
Gold Digger Sound, Leon Bridges.
I heard it, yeah.
I don't even know who Leon Bridges is.
Leon's very old school vibe.
We Are, John Batiste.
I heard it, sorry.
Okay, I saw him perform at the parade.
There you go.
He was at the Macy's parade when I was in New York. Snow Allegra, Temporary Highs in the Violet Skies.
Yo, that's Snow Allegra.
You are the biggest Snow Allegra fan I know. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, I know Dre's going to say is the R&B album of the year.
No, you don't.
Those are the, you're not giving it to Snow Allegra?
Mm-mm. Giving it to her.
Really?
It's either her or Jasmine Sullivan. Jasmine Sullivan, because it was a concept album, and she nailed it. Jasmine Sullivan's voice, when we talked about vocalists, she could sing like half of that top 10 list that Barstool put out, just sing them under the table. She's incredible. But I'm going to pick her because I'm a really big fan, and I think her music is incredible. I love Snow Allegra. I think that album's great. And but it's between Jasmine and her.
For wow. Album. I did like the Jasmine Sullivan album.
So. Hotels is great.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Very empowering for people who are hoes.
Yeah. Listen, they need their anthems too. We're equal opportunity on this show. In terms of rap.
This is easy.
This is weird. Not easy, it's weird. Because now there's a split in categories. Best rap performance and best melodic rap performance.
I don't know what that means. You know what that
is? I was going to ask you.
Here it is. This is melodic rap performance is when you get a bunch of people who don't listen to rap into a room, and it's like, well, he's singing on that one. Let's call it melodic. That's really what it is. They try to create subcategories.
Bone Thugs and Harmony are so mad right now.
Yeah.
Because they'd have a shelf full of Grammys.
Yeah, well.
Look at that. Nate Dogg would have Grammy. Like, there's so many people who missed out.
Nate Dogg would have Grammy.
Yeah, like, on Grammys, because this were just magically appeared this year.
Yeah, Cocaine would have a Grammy. Like, that's a deep cut.
Yo, oh, you just popped Justin Ivey with that
yes,
one.
I
know. So, best rap performance, Baby Keem Kendrick, Family Ties. Mm-hmm. Know you like that. Up by Cardi B. My Life by J. Cole. Way Too Sexy by Drake. And Thought.
Meg?
By Meg Thee Stallion.
I don't have a favorite in this case. I mean,
I think Cole takes this fairly easy.
It's the Grammys. Cardi is a Grammy darling. Up might win this.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't hate on the Bronx. Queen Cardi.
Yeah. So. It'll probably be Up. I can't. If you give it to Drake, I'd just throw the whole Grammys in the trash.
Yo, that Way Too Sexy song does grow on you.
It does because they play it 27 million times. When I first heard it, I was like, this is not
this song is horrible.
And then weeks went by, and I was like, this is tolerable.
Yeah.
But that's about as far as I'll go with it. Somebody was like, this is tolerable. And it was like a few weeks later, like, this is a grant. I was like, nah, man, you done went too far.
Yeah, it grows on you. I'm like Kawhi in the back of the video, where he's just like, just stone face.
The video makes a song.
It does.
That's the case where the video absolutely makes a song.
Yeah, Kawhi, that shit's hilarious. Melodic rap. J. Cole featuring Lil Baby, Pride is the Devil. I don't know why that's melodic, because Lil Baby. Need to Know, Doja Cat.
This is a strange category.
Which I didn't know Doja Cat was a rapper.
She was a rapper.
Oh, with the Move stuff? Was that rapping?
Nah, I mean she.
I always thought she was like a pop star.
Nah, I've been a fan of Doja's for like 7 years since she was like 18 making music. She was rapping first.
Oh.
And she was rapping and singing. She's super talented. Very weird. Needs to start showing her feet in racial chat rooms.
But, yeah. You know. Not stopping her from getting Grammys.
No.
Industry Baby, Lil Nas X featuring Jack Harlow. What's Your Name? Tyler Creator. Which I really like that song.
I do too.
And Hurricane, Kanye West, Weekend, Lil Baby.
You know, this is going to Lil Nas X.
Yo, that song is dope.
It's going to Lil Nas X.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be mad at it.
No, that's what's going to happen.
This is the best, like, case of I was 100% sure he's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, no.
And then just blew the doors off everything this year. I was like, yo, this kid got it.
It's funny, though, because I've only listened to, like, Montero once, and I was like, it's all right.
It's cool.
I was like, but the marketing strategy, through the roof. That wins a Grammy.
Oh, yeah.
The commercials with Elton John and Grubhub.
Oh, this is crazy. Yo, he beat the whole Nike scandal, right? Where he had the devil's blood and all that. Like
I'll say it again.
Untouchable.
Cancel culture's not real. Remember they canceled Doja Cat?
They did cancel Doja. I don't even remember.
And now you get nominated for... Yeah, they were like, oh, it's Doja Cat, you're canceled. Now she's Grammy nominated. Cancel culture's not real, man.
It's not real at all. Here it is, though. Best rap album.
Tyler, the Creator. I don't care.
All right. It's on here.
Go ahead. Just Donda. Go ahead, man. That's... Nope.
King's Disease 2, which is better than King's Disease 1, who won it last year.
I
think it's a better album. Certified Lover Boy.
Shouldn't even be on.
J. Cole, Offseason.
Yeah, it's Tyler, the Creator.
It's between Cole and Tyler.
Tyler. It's their.
But dude, Tyler's album is so good.
Tyler's album is not only good, it is also ambitious, which Cole's is not. And that doesn't mean anything is wrong with Cole's album. Cole's has a straight rap album, and that's what we've always wanted from Cole. And it's great. And you're like, this is really good. But I said this when it came out. I was like, it's really good, but I think people are putting it on a pedestal a little too high. It's a really good album. Tyler's album is not only good, but it's super ambitious. He tries so many different things.
Yeah.
And like, from What's Your Name to Corso to Hot Wind Blows with Wayne, this album, let's see, it's 2021. Yeah, it's the best album of the last 2 years.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, I still really like Allegory. But I'll give it to you.
Allegory was 2019, wasn't it?
It was nominated for a Grammy last year.
Okay. I'll still pick.
It might have been 2019.
Tyler should win this out. And it's crazy. People hear me saying this and know me for a long time. I was like, I thought you didn't like Out of Future. Hey, man.
Tyler. Beef with Shake aside.
Yeah, I was like, that was almost a decade ago. We talked about that on this show. But yes. This is his best body of work. And Igor was his best body of work at that point.
Yeah.
This
it is just wasn't a rap album to me.
Yeah. But this
I thought it was a great album, but not.
This is a rap album. This is a fantastic album. And I know people are gonna say, Cole, Drake being on there is because everybody listened to it.
You know Donda's gonna win.
No, it's not.
Donda's the only hip hop album from this list that's nominated for Album of the Year as well.
Yeah, still not going
to
win.
Usually the dead giveaway to me is like, oh, you're going to win then. Because they deem you the best of this group because they put you as best album.
Yeah, it won't win. It's Kanye is too polarizing for him to win best rap album with Tyler in there.
I think they might be crazy and give it to him. And then he's going to, you want to hear a rant. You thought the Thanksgiving thing was a rant. Let Kanye go to the Grammys and win.
And also the album's not good.
No, the album's horrible.
So there's that part.
That album's atrocious.
Like, Donda's not better than
anything.
Like, it's not better than Nas's album. It's not better than Cole's album.
No.
It's the worst album on this list.
I may be able to name 20 albums this year better than Donda.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that'll say, well, you know, where's Benny the Butcher? And where's, yeah, I get it. But
that's not their
I'm not yet. Necessarily mad at this list of albums. I understand why Drake is on there. Was it a great album? No, it was long. But everybody listened to it. And it's an easy album for people who don't listen to hip-hop say, that's my favorite album, because that's the only album you listen to.
Yeah.
So I get it.
And it wasn't a bad Drake album.
Nah, it was just,
people just wanted growth or to do something different.
You're not getting growth out of Drake.
No, for what? He does this very well. He did Drake to the umpteenth degree.
Well, that's why he doesn't have a classic album. Well, I mean, people argue Take Care is a classic, but.
Yes. It probably has two.
I've always said, he doesn't have an undeniable classic.
And he has undeniably classic mixtape.
That's true.
So, I mean, the guy's catalog is what it is.
I just want him to grow up.
Yeah, I don't think he should win this either, though.
No.
So, interesting. I want to see how that shakes out. Come Grammy time, I will revisit Dre's picks versus who actually wins. And I will laugh when Kanye actually wins the Grammy because it's ridiculous and the album's horrible. So, let's hit the break. When we come back, the old man has to handle something for a second. I will be joined by Clay Guida, UFC veteran, talking to Clay about his upcoming fight, talking about Diego Sanchez, everything in between. I mean, the man's been in UFC for 15 years. amazing conversation with him I know is going to happen after this. So you guys don't go anywhere after that. Then we'll roll into MMA, give our predictions and everything else. Tons of combat sports after this. Don't go anywhere. Be right back.
Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes, and I've got a new podcast, The NFL Roadshow. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, we are back. I will be interviewing, the old man is run off for a second. I'll be interviewing UFC legend, and I use that term because there's no other term to really describe this man's resume and everything he's done in the UFC. Clay Guida going into his 55th professional MMA fight this weekend with the UFC. Clay, thank you for joining me, man. You are, in every sense of the word, a living legend in the sport still.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Kel. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the kind words. And is that how many fights we're at now, huh? I stopped keeping track a long, long time ago, man. So people ask me all the time, what's your record? How many fights you got? This and that. I'm like, man, I couldn't tell you. It's been too long, and every time it feels like, we start with a clean slate, and we get to get in there and just reinvent ourselves and just prove ourselves again. So, yeah, 55 is a good number at 155, so I like that.
Yeah, man, 55. We were talking a little bit before you got on air. 155, again, you're smaller for the division. You're there. You're comfortable. How important is it to be able to fight and just know, like, okay, I'm close to my natural weight. I don't have to drain myself like these other guys are, especially fighting at 39 years old. They usually say it's harder to fight at the lower weights the older you get. You're proving that wrong, and everyone's thinking is wrong. Is it because you don't have to cut a ton of weight?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment, and it's safe to say that I'm a 155er and maybe a 135er's body, you know what I mean? I've seen a lot of 135ers that are bigger than me. The main event this weekend, Jose Aldo, I mean, that, even when he was at 45, I was at 55, he was bigger than me, and even still at 135, he's just, he's a house, man. It amazes me that some of these guys are able to continue to you know, like Jose, he's fighting at the top echelon. He's always fighting number one or number two guy, you know what I mean? Or he is the number one competitor, number two guy. And he keeps getting better and he keeps evolving and really letting these younger guys know that, you know, one of the greats of all time, that Jose Aldo is here to stay. So it's always cool to compete on a card with him as well. And, yeah, I feel like they get older and I stay the same age. I think there's a lot to be said for that, and we're built to last, and that comes from a wrestling background, learning to take care of my body better throughout the years, recover properly in between fight camps, in between fights, take care of myself even more so during camps with, you know, regular massages, cryo freeze therapy, float therapy, chiropractic care, hot yoga, all these different things that we have that are at our fingertips now that may not have been earlier in, you know, my career when, if, you know, financially or just maybe there wasn't that much out there at a, you know, back in 2006, 7, 8 when I was up and coming, you know. So honestly, I'm almost 40, going on 20. I'll be 40 next week, man. And I feel like I'm 20 or 21. I'm in better shape than I've been in my whole life. And I think you can see with our last couple of fights that we still have a lot left in our reserve tank.
No, definitely. Looking back, first UFC fight was 15 years ago. UFC 64, you versus Justin James, submission round two. If you look back 15 years, what would you tell yourself? What would you tell Clay Guida 15 years ago, getting ready for that first UFC fight? Because a lot of people are like, man, I know so much now mentally. I wish I knew back then. What is one thing you could tell a younger you going into the UFC if you could?
Oh, man, it's funny you bring that up because I'm looking out the window of my hotel And I can see the Mandalay Bay where we made our UFC debut 15 years ago, dude. And that's an, I mean, it's literally, it's 200 yards away. You know what I mean? So that's kind of really why I like being out here in Vegas for our fights now, because I get to relive all of those experiences that we had that seem, even though they're 15 years ago, it seems like we made that walk just yesterday. It seems like we were having our first fight week just last week and getting to meet all the faces of the UFC and meet the people behind the scenes, you know, excuse me, the Donna Marcolinis at the time, the Joe Silvas, the Reed Harrises, all the people that really make the UFC excel. They don't get all the recognition. You know what I mean? You just see the athletes, and but the ones behind the scenes that I believe are the ones that really, truly make the UFC hum and just run like a well-oiled machine. So what I would tell myself now to back then is don't ever be satisfied. And that's what I tell myself every day on a daily basis, man. We can always do a little bit more. And I'm constantly reminding myself, you know, just keep pushing you know, the pace, the gas pedal. And that's what's gotten us this far in our career, you know, not having the skill set that most of the lightweight division has, but we make up for it with just grit, toughness, and a wrestling pedigree that just won't stop.
Talking about grit and toughness, most people, when they hear about Clay Guida, the first fight that comes to mind is you versus Diego Sanchez, right? Like, it's a legendary fight.
It's like automatic.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Guida, oh, Diego Sanchez. Like, that fight is on replay. Before every UFC pay-per-view, there's clips of you guys fight, like in the montage and everything. It's a Hall of Fame fight now. Looking back, I mean, those are wars. And a lot of time people are like, man, you can only have so many of those in your career, but you're still fighting. How is it that you've maintained from when looking back at that fight and be like, man, I was crazy for going through that, and then to now still be fighting so many years later? How is it that you've been able to just go through it and keep yourself so healthy?
Yeah, without a doubt, we learned some valuable lessons in fights like that, in fights like the Roger Huerta fight, which also was fight of the year, and I came up just a little bit short in that one too. But we learned lessons that you can't have fights like that time in and time out of the octagon. Otherwise, you're going to have a short career. And you know what? It's tough to stick to those, you know, because every time I feel like I want to go out and, you know, I know I'm capable of putting on fight of the night every time, but with four or five fight of the night losses, guess what? You're going to be fighting for another promotion. I'm going to be back on the Midwest scene. I'm going to be back in the regional circuit somewhere in the U.S., not where I want to be. You know, I want to be in the big show. So I had to kind of sacrifice the knock them down, drag them out, wild fights, you know what I mean? In order to stay in the win column and to stay with the top promotion in mixed martial arts, which is the UFC. It's the Super Bowl of MMA, and that's where I want to be. A lot of people, and Burt Watson, one of our favorites, man, say getting to the UFC is one thing. It's hard. Staying there is even harder. And that's, to me, what it's been all about, just this journey of, you know, continuing to prove to myself that we always belong in there with the best of the best. And, you know, we fought some world champions, we've beaten some, we've come up very short, very close against a lot of them, but we're always just, you know, right there neck and neck with them. And that gives me comfort knowing that, you know, we've been in there with the, you know, the best of the best, the who's who for a decade and a half. And like I always say, the best is yet to come.
When you have a legendary fight with someone like that, like you and Diego, is there a special bond that you guys have? We know, like, Diego right now is in the hospital going through...
Yeah, we're praying for him.
Yes, you know, 20-some-odd days. I'm glad he's tweeting, keeping everyone there. Nothing but prayers for him. Is there a special bond you have for him, especially during a time like this where, you know, his health is really front and center for him, and that's the talking point. Is it something where you check in on him, or are you just constantly thinking when you guys share a moment like that?
Most definitely. Diego and I became blood brothers that day. And that night, and we brought the whole Palms arena, the Pearl at the Palms, as a matter of fact. We brought that whole place. The walls, the ceiling was rattling. It was the loudest place I've ever heard. And it's such a special venue. And we shared 15 minutes you know, blood, sweat, tears, laughter, tears of joy, and tears of defeat. But there was no, you know, there was no defeat that night. Everybody won. The fans won. The, you know, the promotion won. And Diego's going to win on, you know, the other side of this. He's you talk about a warrior, man. It doesn't get tougher than him. And he's going to beat this thing. And we're right there with him. It's funny because we ended up training again back at Jackson's MMA. I would say 2 years after that. And we hadn't really seen each other a whole lot since then. A couple of times in Vegas here and there at events, and always high-fived, hugged, and, you know, we're chopping it up and having fun and laughing at, and, you know, just reminisce on old times. But we happened to, you know, be there on a sparring day our first time. And we were like, all right, here we go. We got to do it. We got to run this thing back right now, man. So we did one sparring session, and I'm talking everybody in the whole gym, both coaches, Mike Winklejohn and Greg Jackson, all the studs in the gym, you know, starting with John Jones was there, Cowboy, Carlos Conda, Isaac Valley Flag, Cub Swanson, Joe Stevenson, the who's who. I mean, the list goes on. Back when, you know, Jackson's was in its heyday, they had everybody. Everyone stopped and watched Diego and I do 1 5-minute round of just beating the hell out of each other, you know, for 5 minutes. And we ended up just as we did when we fought. We high-fived, we hugged, and we laughed it out. And the whole gym was just, like, in shock. They couldn't believe it. And I tell you what, I had some little flashbacks of the fight in that moment when we were sparring, man. It was it was something we had to just get out of our system, you know what I mean, as friends, as teammates, and just moving forward, just knowing that that's a bond that we have for the rest of our lives, you know. And it's something special to share something like that with, you know, another individual. And, yeah, he's one of the toughest, grittiest guys I've ever competed against and, you know, was teammates with. So Diego's in our prayers, and he knows that he's going to be having his hands up on the way out of this hospital here anytime now, any day.
You've stepped into the octagon against the who's who, right, of the UFC, like, throughout the years, Nate Diaz, everything. You fought the current champion. What was it like going against Charles Oliveira before people knew or thought he was going to be the guy? I mean, you fight people, and then they end up becoming something, right? Like, it's one of those things where it's like, man, that you are the toughness, you are the litmus test of the UFC. What was it like sharing the octagon with him, and what have you seen from him now that may be different, or was he championship caliber back then?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, man. I like to take credit for, you know, Charles Oliveira getting his title run, man, because he started it, unfortunately, in our home turf in Chicago, one of the greatest weeks of my life. I got chosen to, I'm a diehard Cubs fan, born and raised, so we got asked to throw out the first pitch in front of a packed stadium and do the seventh inning stretch during fight week. And then we got to fight at the United Center, which is the house that Michael Jordan built. And then shortly after there, Charles Oliveira came and rained on our parade. He got me the only way he was going to get me, man. You know what I mean? But, man, props to him. And he was kind of on his way out there. I think he had lost maybe two or three in a row. And, you know, he was very highly touted earlier in his career. I believe he was one of the youngest UFC athletes at the, you know, at the time, I think, or when he first started. I think he came in the UFC at like 20 or 21. He was super young, and he had a bunch of submissions. And he was kind of, you know, up and down, but he was fighting top guys. I mean, they threw him to the wolves. You know what I mean? He had a bunch of submissions and fought, you know, Anthony Pettis before that. He fought, you know, Cub Swanson, knocked him up before then, and he was just fighting the who's who. And he was up and down from 45 to 55, and I think he really came into his own and just really started to excel. And unfortunately, you know, we were the first on his list of his unprecedented tear that he's been on. What is he on, 8 or 9 in a row, or maybe 10 in a row now?
Yeah, it's
and
in a row,
I think he had like, it's unreal. And I think he finished 7 or 8 of us in a row. And what he did to Tony Ferguson was just beyond me, dude. I mean, that to me, that's one of the most underrated, because I don't really, I didn't hear a whole lot of people talk about it, but what he did to Tony Ferguson was unbelievable, man. To take a wrestler and throw him around like that for 3 rounds, it was just beyond me. You know what I mean? So he's definitely completely evolved, and I'm looking forward to that fight with him and Dustin Poirier more than any, you know, fight throughout the year. And I think that thing is going to be just fireworks. And Dustin Poirier has been on an absolute just the best I've ever seen. And I call him not just a diamond. Dustin Poirier is a destroyer. That dude is just so on his game right now, and he continues to evolve. And it'll be cool to see him fight someone other than Conor McGregor. And, see him put on a show out there. So next weekend is going to be bananas at the UFC as well.
Definitely. And you're heading into this fight. Leonardo Santos, what do you see in your opponent? Because, again, you said you're a smaller lightweight. This guy isn't small. So when you're going in there, wrestler's mentality, when you're looking at this, you're like, man, I got to throw this big dude around for these three rounds. So when you look at your opponent, what are you thinking going into that octagon on Saturday?
Yeah, Leonardo Santos definitely, he portrays some different skill sets, against us. His reach, his length, his jiu-jitsu background is unprecedented. You know, I believe he's a world champion, longtime black belt. We fought several black belts. We fought several world champion Brazilians and top-level jiu-jitsu guys. And when we get in there, we always seem to put on a show against them. So we get past his range and we find our way into the takedowns, man. And that's our home. We love the old ground and pound, and you're going to see a little ground and pound 101, just like the old Carpenter days.
Oh, got to love it. It's interesting because you mentioned his jiu-jitsu background, but you're not scared to take him to the ground. Like you welcome going into that space. Is it a matter of you're just confident? Like I do what I do better than he does what he does.
You said it 110%, man. I take wrestling over jiu-jitsu any day of the week, man. We've been doing this stuff a long time. We're very comfortable in there. We fought guys that are bigger than us. Every opponent we've actually fought has been larger than us, I'm pretty sure. And somehow we find a way to get our hand raised at the end. So I'm looking forward to this matchup come Saturday night, man. Leonardo Santos is tough, and we're going to show him the door.
So last question. You're about to be 40. Again, happy birthday, early birthday.
Appreciate it, man.
What's still to go for you? What drives you still? Like, is there a fight that you still want? Is there something you're chasing specifically? What is it that gets you up every day and you're like, you know what? I still have to do this in my career. Because a lot of people are like, man, you're a Hall of Famer. Like, what are you doing? What still drives you?
Yep. That's a great question. I get it all the time. The love of the sport, the competition, the challenging myself, being around my teammates, you know, throughout the year in camp. There's nothing better than that. Not having to go back, you know, to a 9-to-5 job or have to strap on the tool belt again and go back, you know, being on the job sites, you know, things like that motivate me. Being able to lead and live the life that I want, you know what I mean? Being in the gym all the time, being on the water, fishing, traveling, those are the things, you know, having financial freedom. Those are what motivate me every day. Yes, the belt's always in our sights, you know what I mean? And not to mention, look at Glover Teixeira. 6 or 7 years ago, that guy fought for the world title. 7 years later, 42 years old, he was the oldest champion besides Randy Couture. So, I mean, there's always a time that we could still go on another run. But for me, it's just taking one fight at a time, learning, having fun out there, and just challenging ourselves, man, because there's no place I'd rather be than in the octagon putting on a show for our fans.
Man, everyone appreciates it. Every time you step into the octagon, it's a show. So we appreciate you. We appreciate the style. Thank you for taking time out during fight week to come here, talk to me. Man, it's a great one. Good luck this weekend. Can't wait to watch your fight. Again, everyone, make sure you tune into this fight. It's must-watch television whenever Clay Guida is in the octagon. So we appreciate you. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up talking about UFC, giving our predictions. Don't go anywhere. Right back after this.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure. New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
All right, we are back. The old man is back in his chair. Shout out to Clay Guida for coming through. Amazing interview right there. Man is just, he's made for the microphone, made for the TV. 15-year veteran in the UFC. What a career, and it's still going. That guy is an animal in the octagon and just an amazing person out of it. So cool. Thank you, Clay Guida, for taking time out. I would say during the weight cut, but the man told me he doesn't even have to cut that much weight. He's like, he could weigh in an hour from now. He had a spread that looked incredible. It looked like I was at Dre's house for one of his events. It was just fruit and cheeses and everything. The guy is eating well during fight week. I love to see people fighting at their right weight class and what it does. And maybe that's how you get to 40 years old and still stay in the UFC.
Yo, Clay, it feels like Clay Guida has fought for like 30 years, right? Yo, and he's not even 40 yet.
No, and he was like, it feels like yesterday. He said that first event, he looks out the window. Mandalay Bay is right there. He was like, yeah, I made my walk right there. UFC, it's what, 64. And then he was like, it feels like yesterday I was making that walk.
That's a lie.
15 years ago.
There's nothing yesterday about that.
No, not at all.
Nothing.
But that's crazy. I miss when they held events at the Mandalay.
I miss when they held them at the Palms.
He also, that's where him and Diego fought.
Yes.
At the Palms. He's like, it's the loudest reaction he's ever had.
Yeah, the Palms was a really nice venue. Clay is like, to be him and Jim Miller, to be around as long as they have and still, like, fighting is commendable.
Yeah.
But again, as I always talk about with money, like, I hope they're not fighting for money at this point.
Again, during our interview, it was great. I mean, he was pretty open about that, too, when he was just like, you know, I'm fighting for the lifestyle I want to uphold. And he's like, not necessarily for the money in his bank account, because it's not like he's broke, but he wants to be able to be in the gym every day to make sure his family has enough money so he can do that for the rest of his life. Like, I don't want to go back to 9-to-5. I don't want to go do construction when I hang him up. He's like, I just need to have this lifestyle forever. And he's like, that's why I'm fighting. Okay. So it's like he's fighting at this point to pad savings.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because he's broke. It's just because he doesn't want to do anything else ever again. And he's just like, yo, I just want to go even when he can't compete in the UFC. He wants to fight at the highest level. Doesn't want to go back to regional circuit, as he called it. But he was like, I want to have enough money in my bank. So I do this every day. Go hang out with the boys. You know, roll, wrestle, hang out. I should have asked him if he wanted to coach then. Like, you're going to be in there, get paid.
You know, because, I mean, it's probably one of the subjects, but, and this is no disrespect to Clay Guida. He's still fighting the UFC, right?
Yep.
He's never fought for a title.
No.
He's been here forever. And they cut Kevin Lee, who did fight for a title.
Yep.
Who was a top lightweight. I can't understand the logic between who they cut and who they don't.
I don't understand the logic behind it. I would say with Kevin Lee, he did have pretty long breaks in time between fights before. Whether it was moving up in weight, coming back down in weight, or getting injured. One time he had the staph infection.
I mean, he fought with the staph infection.
He did, and then had to take time off after. That was ill-advised. Tony Ferguson, Molly whopped him, right? That was the title
fight. That was the Ferguson fight, yeah.
Yeah.
But he fought with that.
Yeah, which is not good. But so, like, now when a guy goes like that, Clay Guida, which I can understand, Jim Miller, stuff like that, like, you call him up, they're going to be there in 3 months on their fight date. They're going to be there 3 months after that. Like, you're going to get four fights a year out of them that are going to be pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I guess the hard part for me to understand is kind of like the WWE. Like, these contracts aren't really guaranteed, right?
No, yeah.
It's like, I signed this contract, and you say, oh, you got five fights on your contract for X amount of dollars. But if you don't book me for a fight, for whatever reason, and then you decide, we don't want you anymore, you can just let me go.
Yep.
WWE's the same
one-sided way.
One-sided. Yeah, it's like, oh, we signed you multi-million-dollar deal, four-year deal, cool. And I didn't like what you were showing me after 6 months, you're out of here.
Yep.
And then you have a non-compete. Now I got to sit at home for 90 days with nothing to do. And then everybody called me washed up because I got kicked out, right? It just doesn't make any sense. No disrespect to Clay, because I think Clay's always been entertaining. I just look at somebody like that and say, why does he stay and Kevin goes?
Yeah, I think he wins enough fights. Like, it's one of those things, like, kind of got to be on, like, a three-fight losing streak or something to go. Like, there's fighters where we look at this and be like, yo, they got to win. or they're Bellator bound.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened.
Now they're collecting the PFL checks.
We're talking about next week, Charles Oliveira. Dude was on the cusp.
Quick, fast. Turned around against Clay Guida.
Robbie Lawler had one fight left on a Strikeforce contract. Came to the UFC, and they were like, just give him a fight, and then we'll cut him.
Yep.
And then he won. And I was like, all right, fine, give him another fight. And this fool became champion.
Yep.
There is no logic behind what the UFC does when it comes to keeping fighters and getting rid of them. You pay certain fighters this much. Alistair Overeem gets almost $1 million a fight.
For what? I don't know. Is he still with them?
No. He's fighting in Glory now. I think he's going back to Glory Kickboxing.
Oh, kickboxing. Okay.
But prior to that, this dude was making all this money, and it's like, for what? Meanwhile, you got other guys that are doing that. You know, they lose a fight or two, and then you just cut them? I can't understand the logic. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no protection for those fighters.
No. But unlike the WWE, that's still the destination. That is like everyone's, in MMA's dream is to still be with you. So you're safe for now.
For now.
It's not like Bellator's AEW. Like, people aren't flocking over there. Mm-mm. So with that being said, before we dive into the UFC and make our predictions on Clay Guida's card that he's on this weekend, headlined by Jose Aldo, another guy who's been fighting UFC forever, we got to talk about Triller. They had the triangular ring, I don't know. This ring was smaller than the desk we are sitting at.
Yeah.
You couldn't go anywhere. I saw photos of this. I was like, oh, this is bad. So when I was keeping an eye on it as I was at the fights and I was watching them, and I'm seeing boxers get mollywopped the entire time.
We got to use the air quotes for boxers.
They were boxers once upon a time. They're like 6-ounce gloves, but they had like fingers.
I'm just saying, name a boxer on that card.
Well, Pulev headlined.
Well, Pulev destroyed Frank Mir.
That's true.
Right? But he's a real boxer.
Yeah.
Who else? Have you seen box before?
I can barely name people on the card, let alone boxers.
Thank you. So when people's like, boxing is beating MMA and MMA is beating boxing, like, I don't know who these guys are.
They've boxed like in two contests.
Yeah, it's like you fought cab drivers, right? Now you're a boxer? Like, I rap on the street corner. Am I a rapper now? It's not the same thing. That boxing versus MMA nonsense was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, but that's how they hyped it up.
And who decided, who was the genius that was like, yo, Kubrat Pulev just fought Anthony Joshua for the unified heavyweight titles. Let's put him in there with Frank Mir, who's never won a boxing match.
They okey-doke Frank Mir.
Yo.
I hope he was paid well. Because before we get to Frank Mir, Mike Perry won. He got dropped, but he won.
And he was like, oh, I fought a boxer. No, you didn't.
No.
I don't know who this guy is. I cover boxing. I don't know who any of these guys are. I think there's one. I can't think of his name right now. Whoever it was. He sucked. He fought Kelly Pavlik in like 2011. Right? It's like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing
That's
here?
The qualifications, man.
Yo.
You have 3 pro boxing bouts. You could be on Triller.
So I'm watching this on my phone. I have the T.O. fight on my laptop, and the Fulton fight is ahead of me because I'm at the Showtime card. Yep. On my phone, Keith Idick from Boxing Scene is looking at my phone. He's like, man, you're really multitasking tonight. And I was like, I'm doing the most. And I'm looking at my phone, and he's like, who is that? And I was like, well, he's a boxer. He's like, no, he's not. I was like, you're right. No, he's not. I was like, I don't know who any of these guys
are. And Idick doesn't know him.
We're like looking at each other, and I was like, yo, this is bad. But then the screen pops up, and he goes, is that Nick Cannon?
Yeah.
Like, yep.
Yes, it is.
Nick Cannon and Fat Joe and who
else? Full Metallica concert, I guess, right?
Full Metallica concert. Now,
that's worth the price of admission.
Listen.
Like, of the pay-per-view. Like, random people getting punched in the face and Metallica is probably a good combination.
Well, here's the thing, right? There will be a Netflix special on this soon. Like, Cocaine Cowboys 2020?
Yeah.
2021, where we talk about Triller. Because only a cokehead can come up with this concept. With coke money.
To go from, in a year, looking like maybe they're in the running for Golden Boy's roster.
Yeah.
For having Jake Paul, for being the home of whatever people may think about it, but the return of these retired legends, where you have Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr., the pay-per-view numbers they put out into the world, which are looking a little funny in the light. But to go from that, and you're like, yo, the Triller, you know, Triller's a player, to bidding on Teofimo versus Kambosos, overbidding, having that fight, like, yo, they may be a real player in the boxing scene, to this in a year.
Yeah. It's cokehead money.
It's ugly.
Yo, this is
they're getting a lot of. I don't know how much they paid Metallica.
You know they paid Metallica everything.
But they had to be a shitload. Metallica's like, what are we doing?
Yo, they were like,
and there's no way they stayed for the fights.
No. Well, maybe. I mean, dude, Triller had Trump commentate.
They did.
This is a circus.
Yeah,
it's a circus. And again, this show. If I'm a combat sports fan, right? Fan, not a casual. And you tell me, you call me, it's like, Trey, Kubrat Pula is fighting Frank Mir. And you know what I'm saying? Get the fuck out of here. get that out of my face.
You should probably lead with your biggest fight.
Right. Like come on. Like, when Mike Tyson fought Roy Jones, that was a spectacle. That was an event. That could get casuals
Even
involved.
Even Anderson Silva's fight was really good.
Yeah, with Chavez. You Chavez. Go, oh, man, Anderson Silva, yeah, he's still really good.
He breaks off of Chavez.
Yeah, but then you go Kubrat Pulev, and people are like, who? And then somebody was like, well, he got mopped by Anthony Joshua. Oh, I want to pay to see that. Frank Mir. Who is Frank Mir be? Oh, you remember Brock Lesnar just destroyed him at UFC 100.
164 Wait, UFCs
then,
ago.
And then the next thing you go is, yeah, he's boxing now. And they're like, wait. I ain't never seen Frank Mir knock somebody out.
In a ring that's like an eighth of the size of a real boxer.
This is a clown show.
It was a sight to behold. It's Triller around 6 months from now.
Hey, you heard Craig Mack. You won't be around next year. Like, ain't no way. If they do, somebody gonna have to do a deep dive on those books. Because ain't no way they're funding this thing and getting any kind of return. Like, you know how deep they are on the red? They're contributing to the national deficit right now with the shows. It's ridiculous.
It just makes me think. It reminds me, like, of The Producers, which is one of my favorite musicals of all time, where the whole purpose was to put on the worst musical and have it tank, because then you'll just not pay taxes on it, take all your things and bounce. They're in that category now.
Yo,
where they're just, this has to just be sabotage, so they just don't pay taxes and just bounce with their earnings.
Dude, they promoted, they were like, Michael Hunter is fighting on the next card. Now, I like Michael Hunter.
So do I. I don't know how he's.
But then I'm like,
in bed with Triller.
Well, the question is, I'm like, and that's it. There was like the promo. Michael Hunter, he's like shadow boxing. And then Fades to Black. And me, I'm like, yo, who's he fighting?
They don't know. They named
They
his,
don't.
They named his opponent like a day ago.
They're just rolling somebody up. They was like, hey, man. They're like, hey, man, I know you're driving this Uber. Would you like to drive a better Uber?
That's it.
Come fight Michael Hunter.
And it's heavyweight?
Yo, Michael Hunter's going to get
anyone.
This man.
Anyone from the street.
And I don't know who's sanctioning this. You see, ain't had no Triller in Vegas yet.
No.
Yo, Bob Bennett and Nevada State Athletic Commission be like.
One thing we know, you can do anything you want in Hollywood, Florida.
Yes.
Anything.
Anything. It like literally.
They let Holyfield fight down there on 3 days notice.
They said, Evander, you look great. How's your physical? We ain't going to talk about my physical. Go to Florida.
Who beat the brakes off of him?
Vitor Belfort. Vitor Belfort beat up Holyfield. It was so bad that Holyfield didn't even really get hurt. He just got hit, and the referee was like, oh, this ain't going to end well. Let's get out of here before we have a homicide.
They was the only man with common sense. He was like, yo, I'm going to let this go on until this old dude takes one punch.
Yeah.
As soon as he gets hit,
yo, and what
the fight is over.
Evander was like, I wasn't hurt. Like, listen to you. Your brain is hurt.
To be fair, I think he sounds like that normally.
Exactly. He shouldn't be in a boxing ring doing anything.
It's like, no.
So, yeah, this Triller Triad show, like, I just have to talk about, I have not, okay. Frank Mir got hit so hard by Pulev.
Phased out.
He didn't phase out. It was the finishing animation for Mortal Kombat. He just stopped and froze and did the wiggle.
The wiggle.
And I'm like, I'm watching on my phone, and I'm like, man, Pulev, you know what the inputs are for these fatalities. Put them in. And he's going. He's wiggling, and Dan Mergliotta is just looking at him. Now, Dan Mergliotta is a credible MMA referee.
Yes.
He knows better. He must have been just as entertained by this as we were. Because he watched this man wiggle and wobble, and then Pulev's looking at the referee, looking at him. And at the same time, there was two thoughts. I was like, either Pulev is saying somebody unpause this guy, or somebody give me the input so I can finish him.
Yep. Just start smashing buttons.
And yo, and he walked up, and Mergliotta was like, all right, that's enough.
That's it.
Excellent. Fatality.
That's what they needed, really, though, for Mir to just get flat. Because the wobble was cool, but they needed something dirty. Like, uppercut, up two levels
Yo.
Of the building. Yes. Oh, they got a friendship finish. Shout out to Cole.
That would have been great if the if Pulev would have opened his gloves and did the rainbow friendship. I'd have been like, yes,
that's how, honestly,
Kavanaugh and them might be listening to this podcast and they're thinking like, what are we gonna do for the next Triller show? And I know one of them's like, yo, let's put like a shark tank around so that they get knocked out and sharks eat them.
Yes, real life or death situation.
And this is why I say it's a Coke show, right? Because then somebody's like, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
let's put
drink,
a bed of spice.
They smoke. They do a lot of weird shit on Triller.
Let's do a bed of spikes outside the ring. Who's gonna fight?
It doesn't matter.
We just want the spectacle. Who's gonna perform? Eminem.
No,
pay him everything. You have an Eminem Fight Club,
and Eminem would probably do it for the bag.
Hey, I want my royalty check. I see y'all. I know they're listening to this.
Taking that
money. Yeah, Eminem Fight Club. They're gonna do it because it'll be like Eminem. It probably won't be Eminem because I don't feel like Eminem would do that.
Who's a washed-up Detroit MMA fighter? You can get somebody.
It'll be a Kid Rock Triller show.
Oh, Kid Rock would do that for half the price.
And then Trump will be out there behind him.
Oh, yeah. He's not even performing that. He's not even doing the rapping Kid Rock. Like, no, he's doing like Sweet Home Alabama on loop.
The Bojangles.
Yeah, that version of Kid Rock.
Sponsored by Church's Chicken.
That will sell very well in Florida.
Yeah, won't sell here. They don't make any money. But that show was absolutely ridiculous.
That was crazy. UFC took the week off last week and allowed us to focus on that.
Yo, why did all this happen on Thanksgiving weekend? That was the one thing that was going through my mind while I was sitting at the Fulton Figueroa fight. Like, I was looking at that fight, and I'm looking at the T.O. fight, and I'm looking at the Triller fight, and I was like, yo, we just ate, like, 2 days ago. Like, this is supposed to be the weekend where, like, nothing's going on, and I can watch football. No, I'm watching three fights at the same time.
Yeah. They just
the UFC is the only one that was just like, the only sensible ones in the room was the UFC was like, yo, just give them Thanksgiving off.
Yeah. Dana didn't want to work on Thanksgiving. Like,
we're not popping a rating. Like,
yeah, nobody
cool.
in that office wanted to work. So UFC comes back this weekend. Font versus Aldo. We're just going to give our predictions real quick. Main card before we get out of here. Brian Barberina versus Darian Weeks.
Brian Barberina. Man, when's the last time Brian Barberina fought?
Oh, here are a couple names on here where it's like, damn.
Well, this is what the fight night cards have become. You say, well, who's fighting on fight night? And then you say the name, and they're like, damn, I forgot he still fought.
Yep.
Once upon a time, UFC cards used to be just loaded with talent.
I told you, Brian Barberina's 32. I feel like he's been around forever.
Yeah, okay. I'm picking Barberina. Barberina's still a decent fighter.
Yeah, I mean, Darian Weeks, I don't know much about him. So
I mean,
I
feel like Darian, like, this is UFC 2.0, like NXT. they're just putting guys out there, and you're like, from the Contender Series. And I was like, dog, don't nobody watch that no more.
Yeah.
You got to be the hardest of hardcores to watch UFC Dana White's Contender Series. I watched it, like, the first two seasons. I went to a few of those shows when Greg Hardy was on there. Yeah. Like, all right, well, I'm going to go check these out. Now, I ain't got the bandwidth.
O'Malley was there.
Yeah.
Found a couple good people.
No, it was, you know, Alonzo Benefield was on there. They had some good competition. It's too much.
Yeah, way too much. And I got other stuff to do on Tuesdays.
Watch NXT, huh?
Brendan Allen versus Chris Curtis.
That's actually a pretty good fight. But
Brendan Allen.
Yeah, Brendan Allen's he should win this probably by stoppage. Another, if I remember correctly, this is another Contender Series opponent.
Yep.
Keep it moving.
And Brendan Allen, listen.
He's won two in a row.
Yep. Young guy. 24. He's on the ascending. This should be a good fight for him. Jimmy Crute, Jamahal Hill.
This is actually a really good
fight.
This
is a tough-ass fight.
Crute is coming off of that loss to Anthony Smith.
Yeah.
And Jamahal Hill lost to Paul Smith in his last fight?
I thought he got injured.
He got submitted, didn't he?
Yes.
That was the armbar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was ugly. And but to Paul Craig.
Yeah, Paul Craig. I'm sorry, not Paul. Paul Craig and... Yeah. Oh, man, Jimmy Crute. This is actually a really good light heavyweight fight. I'm going to pick Jamahal Hill because that power.
I like the power.
But Jimmy Crute, I mean, there was a lot of people that thought Crute was going to be Anthony Smith.
Yeah.
Because they thought Lionheart was washed up, and Lionheart was like, no, I'm not. I just fought really elite competition. You give me these bottom feet, I'm just going to tear into them. I'm going to pick Jamahal Hill just off of the I'll pick him by, like, second round stop.
I'll do Jimmy Crute just because that injury was ugly.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't know if you just bounce back from that. Like, that's tough. I'll take Crute to win this one. But like you said, it's two young guys in light heavyweight division that needs it. I mean, the champion is, what, 42 years old?
Yeah.
So it's just a really weird pairing that they pair them this against each other this early.
Yeah.
All right.
It's an interesting fight. But it's a good fight. It's a fight that I'll be watching ringside while at the Haney Diaz fight.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on that.
I'll be right next to you, I'm sure. They always set us next to each other. Clay Guida versus Leonardo Santos. Clay Guida was on the show.
You skipped the fight.
No, I did not.
Yes, you did.
What did I skip?
Come on, man. Oh, no, that's the co-main, the Riddell.
That's next. All right,
because that's a hell of a fight. Yes. Anyway, Guida and Leonardo Santos.
Guida's on the show. I'm picking Guida. Everyone else prior to last week that came on our show as a guest either lost in brutal fashion or their fight was called off due to injury or COVID or something like that. We had the corner curse before last week, and Stephen Fulton pulled through. And he had me sweating bullets during that fight.
Hell of a fight.
Because that could have went either way. But Fulton was the first person to come on our show as a guest and win.
Yeah.
Even Chris Bey was on the show. I told this to Cole earlier. Chris Bey was on the show, lost the tag team title match after.
That's true.
I was like, damn it. That's kayfabe was even against our show.
Yeah.
They were booking for the curse.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. I'm going to pick Clay Guida. It's a good fight, though. Santos lost his last fight. Guida's a... Captain Caveman is still a machine in the octagon. He's never had, like, tremendous knockout power, but the cardio's never gone away. So he'll win a decision.
Yeah, I'll take Clay Guida by decision, too. He's not going to sub a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt.
Yeah.
Brad Riddle, like you said, Riddell versus Rafael Fiziev.
Now, listen, this is a really good co-main event. Fiziev is coming off that fight with Bobby Green, where... The striking that he has is fantastic. Riddell's on this, seven-fight winning streak? And you have your classic, like, wrestler-striker dynamic. I'm going to pick Fiziev just because this is a tough fight. I feel like there's a lot more mileage that you can get with Fiziev. He looks so good against Bobby Green. And Bobby Green looked great in his last fight. But he was completely neutralized by Fiziev's striking here. Riddell's going to have to get this fight on the canvas quick. If he doesn't, he can land a big shot too. But yeah, I'm going to pick Fiziev. It's a really good fight. I wonder where it's going to be. Like, I'm trying to compute in my mind what I'm watching in the ring with Haney Diaz. It might be at the same time as the McCaskill fight, which I'm really looking forward to.
That's going
to
be good.
Yeah. So
even though she has a late changing opponent.
Yeah, I don't care. I like Jessica McCaskill.
Me too. Yeah. Like, women's boxing is just incredible.
Yeah.
So
I'm picking Fiziev. So. Not with a ton of confidence. It's a classic clash of styles that could turn out to be a great fight or a stinker.
Split decision. I'll give it to him by split. Because, again, when you're messing with a wrestler, you get on the ground, you lose that round real quick.
That's true.
And when it's a three-round fight, two takedowns, no matter what you do on the feet, could be the end of you. So it's always tough when you're a striker and the other guy is there just trying to take you to the ground. And then main event, Rob Font versus Jose Aldo.
Boy, this is a good ass fight.
Yeah. Give me Aldo to win.
Listen.
What? Like, what year is this? Aldo's winning main events.
Yo. Jose Aldo, I thought he was washed up, right? After the Holloway beatings, after Petr Yan punished him.
Yep.
It felt like it was over. And he's looked phenomenal lately. Rob Font schooled Cody Garbrandt, which I didn't see coming. You know?
I mean, what is Cody now?
I don't know. But this is the guy that he was styling on Dominic Cruz. That's the only thing. Like, you picked him to be Dominic Cruz. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I did.
And he completely outboxed Dominic Cruz. And Cody Garbrandt went out there and fought with his heart, got lit up by TJ Dillashaw, the COVID, everything else.
You know what Cody Garbrandt reminds me of? And I hope this may not be the case going forward, but something we saw. Teofimo Lopez. Where you go and you solve the puzzle. And you train this whole time, and Team Alpha Male and everyone prepares you to solve a puzzle. And you do it, and you become champ. His dad and everyone, from the beginning, his dad was like, I'm going to go get this belt, and then we're going to get all the belts by being Lomachenko. They trained to solve the puzzle that is Lomachenko. Got the title, got mollywopped right after that. Yep, just the same way. And it's just, you're never the same again.
Yeah, your ego takes a hit. Yeah, you might be right because, I mean, obviously this isn't, we're not talking about Cody's not fighting. But the reality is you train your life to get to the mountaintop.
Yep.
You get there, and you forgot what it took to get there, and you just think, because I won that fight, no. I can just whoop everybody.
Yep. You train for a specific mountaintop, and then you forget that there's a bunch of different ones, and you got to climb other mountains. Or, by the way, other people are coming after you. You've become the mountain, and you don't know how to handle that.
Well, that's the fascinating thing, right? Because when you're at the top, like Floyd, for instance, or Anderson Silva, when you're at the top, everybody's studying you.
Everyone.
Everybody's waiting to fight you. Every fight you fight, like people lie and be like, I didn't watch a champion fight. You're a liar because you've been waiting your whole life to fight that person. Yep. Then you beat that person. And then you forget, oh, shit, they're studying me now.
Yeah.
I'm the guy. Like, Kambosos came after T.O. like, well, I'm coming for you. And T.O. was like, oh, I'd be Vasily Lomachenko. You're a nobody. I don't even got to train properly. I'll just beat you up.
And he studied everything he needed.
So, yeah, that's probably what happened to Cody. That being said, Jose Aldo lost 3 fights in a row. The Marlon Moraes fight, even if you watch it now, Aldo didn't lose that fight, right? I could see how he lost that decision. It was very close. But Aldo didn't look bad in that fight.
No. I could have gave him that fight.
The Jan fight was just, we realized, like, Jan's a savage,
yeah.
Right? Like, he's a monster.
And then Volkanovski.
Yeah.
No shame in that.
Yeah.
That was a tough-ass stretch. What was Dana doing to the guy?
Just, he was trying to figure out, yo, you going to Bellator or what? Like, he was like, we're going to figure this out. So, put you in there with savages. But his last out of his Pedro Munhoz, he looked like the old Jose Aldo again.
Yep. He was throwing leg kicks.
Which is like.
Put a smile on my face.
Yo, it felt like for years that the controller button broke with Jose Aldo. Like, yo, the B button works. Throw the damn leg kick. Remember what he did to Uriah Faber? Like, he was just taking people's legs out. Now, you're fighting Rob Font, who was a pretty good striker.
Yep.
Who beat Cody Garbrandt. He's on 5-fight winning streak. Aldo's on a 2-fight winning streak. Aldo needs this more. I know Font thinks he needs this more, but Aldo needs this fight.
Yeah.
Aldo, I feel like, has found himself again in a way that he found himself within himself. He found out, I can't fight like WEC Jose Aldo. That guy that need Cub Swanson to hell is gone.
Yeah.
I figured out how to cut weight, which is crazy, because once upon a time,
big for 140.
There was like, he's got to go lightweight. Yeah. Fight Anthony Pettis. Remember, that was a super fight.
Yep.
Him and Pettis at lightweight. He's bantamweight now,
yep.
Comfortably. When I saw him on the scale against the Munhoz fight, I said it on this podcast. I was like, man, he don't look well.
Yep.
And then he went out and beat the brakes off of Munhoz. Like, just fantastic striking. I think the same thing is going to happen here. I think Font's going to fight a good fight, but he's going to find out that the Aldo that knows who he is and fights within himself, that Aldo, that 80% Aldo, is still better than 95% of that division.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
on the money.
He could go on a Glover Teixeira type run.
I don't think he'll win the title. not in that division.
Depending on who's champion at the time.
So wait. Don't throw Aldo under the bus.
No, I'm just saying, like, depending on who's champion. Yeah, like, you don't. You don't know.
I mean, it's Jan. It's, yeah. I mean.
Jose Aldo can beat Aljamain Sterling?
He could.
And I like Aljamain Sterling.
I mean, he could. Like, we don't even know if Aldo's going to be champion with the
injuries. I have no clue he's going
to
be champion.
But when you, like, you said it, you know who you were alluding to.
Yeah.
You weren't alluding to Jan. You were alluding to Aldo.
No, yeah, no. He's not beating Jan.
No, he's not.
But if someone else, for any reason, it's like, if Aldo does fight Jan again and doesn't get kneed to oblivion on the mat. Like, so if he fights him and for any reason wraps his ass up in some weird pretzel and lands a sub, like fourth round, just on some stupid shit, then yeah, if Jose Aldo fought him, I can see Jose kicking the hell out of his leg. Especially like Aljamain Sterling now has that weird, like, Conor McGregor-esque wide ass stance.
Well, he throws a lot of kicks. Yeah.
Aldo has one leg to chop down the whole time.
Yeah.
It's a whole different fight.
No, it's a totally different fight. But that being said, I think Aldo wins this fight, probably by decision. If he knocks him out, then we got to have a conversation about Jose Aldo. Like, if he finishes Rob Font.
I'm taking Aldo by finishing. 25 minutes is a long-ass time.
It is.
And Rob Font's tough, and he's a good striker. I just don't see him doing anything better than Jose Aldo.
Well, the thing
he's not better at anything than Jose.
The thing about Jose is, when I say he fights within himself, he's learned how to pace himself. Mm. So if you watch Jose Aldo fights now versus when he fought like 5-6 years ago, when he was blowing his gas tank trying to get guys out of there in the first or second round, and then he had to he had to figure out how to win the decision because he was dog tired. Now he just wins decisions. So I think he wins the decision against Font. If he stops, I wouldn't be surprised. But I don't think it'll be an early stoppage.
No. It's one of the accumulation
Font's
of leg kicks and pressure and everything.
Font's going to be in the fight.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly, he'll be in the fight.
Aldo's there to be hit. Don't get me wrong. But I think he just breaks him down.
Yeah.
So give me a late stoppage there. But, no, that's what we have for today. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Interesting conversation to start off the pod today. I loved where it went. Talked about a little bit of journalism, everything in between. So we appreciate you. Thanks to everyone here at Blue Wire, Blue Wire Studios at the Wynn Las Vegas. If you're in town, Wednesdays, Sundays, come check us out. Hang out here while we record. Watch us through this fish bowl that is the glass. Shout out to everyone in production. Shout out to producer Cole, baby. Always holding it down, making sure that we sound great for you guys. Check us out on social media as well, at Corner Podcast _ on Twitter, at Corner Club for Life on Instagram. Follow me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale on all platforms. I think that is it. I went through the whole spiel in one breath. I'm getting good at this. Not bad. Everyone stay safe. Enjoy all of the combat sports coming up this weekend. Later on in the week, we'll be back. Or excuse me, in the weekend, we'll be back with another show. I think we're going to go back-to-back MMA.
Yeah.
This week. So that is going to be
fun. We'll tell the listeners why. Because people are going to ask, why are you doing back-to-back MMA? Well, Haney fights Diaz on Saturday and Tank fights Isaac on Cruz on Sunday. And by the time we do this podcast, the Cruz fight will be happening afterward.
Yep.
And it makes no sense with the bearing that Tank has on the division, on multiple divisions. We should just wait.
Yep.
So be patient. Wait it out.
Yep. So we'll get boxing again next Wednesday. But we'll just go back-to-back MMA and throw some fun stuff in there as well to open the show. So, again, appreciate everyone for listening. Until next time, we're out.
Peace.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.